Okay, so this year is Menashe and Yeshaya. So it's based on the Gemara Nivamos, Mem Tesma base. Okay, so it's an interesting Gemara, and there's like a lot of points I'd like to get to, but time is short, so I'll try to move a little bit. Okay, so really there's two halves to this Gemara. Okay, the first half is the story itself, and then the Gemara tries to resolve the contradictions in the second half of the story. So we'll take it one piece at a time, and we'll see how far we get. I'm not sure. Mem Tesma base and Yivamos. Memtes. Okay. So it's like this. Yeshaya was Menashe's grandfather, right? Yeshaya's daughter married Chizkiyahu HaMelech, right? Yeshaya HaNavi prophesied for four kings, right? It would have been the fifth. Menashe was the fifth king. Chizkiyahu was his last king and brought down a Pasuk Aleph in Yeshaya. And the next king, Menashe, it seems like as soon as Menashe took the stand, he killed Yeshaya. Okay, and that's what this was found written in a whatchamacallit, Megillas Yochsin Yerushalayim. There's a parallel version of this Bavli in the Yerushalmi. It was found written that Menashe killed Yeshaya Hanavi. Okay, good. So Amar, yeah.
What's Megillas Yochsin?
It was just like a letter. It was like a scroll written down that had Siyichas of who's a mamzer. And we passed like Rebbe Ben Yaakov, and Menashe killed Yeshaya. It's really random.
Is it reliable, though? Like some random thing you saw?
The Bavli and Yerushalmi are reliable. So whether or not we go through,
So why would, was this Rashi? No, Atenaz, okay. Why would Benaz just trust in some random thing you found?
I don't know. I don't know the stats of Megillas Yochsin.
Okay.
But, it's brought down by both Gemaras. And both Gemaras and Rashi and Yeshaya Pasigal mentions it. Okay, in any event, whether it's historically accurate or not is a different story. Okay? Menashe killed Yeshaya. Okay, that's what it said. Okay, so that's all it said. But now Rava, Amar Rava, Meidan Dainei V'Katlei, I guess Rava also had a Mesora of exactly what happened. He's saying he didn't just kill him. First he judged him, and then he killed him. Okay, so what was the judgment? Amarle, Menashe said to Yeshaya, Moshe Rabach Amar. Moshe, your Rebbe, Yeshaya said, Kilo Yirani Adam V'chai. A person can't see Moshe and can't see Hashem and live. That Amar's Veres Hashem Yoshev Kisaram Venisa. And you said that you see Hashem. Right? Yeshaya's famous Navi, Maisi Merkava. He says he sees Hashem sitting on the throne. So he sees Moshe. Moshe said it's impossible to see Lo Yarnu Adam V'chai, and you claim you saw Hashem. Okay. Moshe Rabbi Chamar, right? Kimi Gal Gad Lashon Kim Krovim Lav Kashem Lakinim B'chol Kareinu Lav. Right, Hashem is always close to Klai Yisrael. V'ad Amrus Dirsh Hashem B'Matzo, and you say seek Hashem when He's close by. So sometimes He's close, sometimes He's not. So again, you're contradicting, right? Rashi, Masha Shapam Meina Matzoi, sometimes Hashem's not close by, not Matzoi, so that's contradicts the Torah. Okay. Moshe Rabbi Chamar is Mispar Yemech HaMalek. In the Brachos, right, it says that the days of your life I will fill, right, if you do everything right, you'll have the full, you'll live at your full number of days. Okay. Va'ad Amraso Vesafdi Yemech HaMesh Esri Shana, and you added to Chizkiyahu's life 15 years. It seems like Moshe just held the best you can do if you keep the whole Torah is just live out the full day, your full days. And now you're adding 15 years to Chizkiyahu's life. Impossible, yeah.
But can you say that Chizkiyahu's life was being cut short? That was the original.
Well, that's the other Shita, okay? That is Rabbi Akiva's position, but the Chama to hold the other way. And apparently Menashe held like the Chama. Yeah, it's a machlokas tanayim. That's, if we have time, we're going to get to the end. It's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chama. Rabbi Akiva holds like Menashe. Rabbi Akiva holds like Menashe that basically you can't get life added on to you, right? If you keep the whole Torah and everything, you can live out your full number of days. That's the best you get. And then Rabbanan hold, arguing Rabbi Akiva hold, you can add on time if you do keep the Torah mitzvos. Add on time. And then Rabbanan asks Rabbi Akiva, what about this pasuk? And Rabbi Akiva gives that answer. Rabbi Akiva gives the answer is that no. First it was cut down 15 years and then he got it back. Okay? I think it was cut down 15 years because he wasn't Osik in Peruvu because he saw he'd have a Russia like Menashe. And then he davened and he got the 15 years back. I think so. I think that's the story. I think that's in Chelek. if I recall.
It's in Brachos.
It's also in Brachos. Maybe it's in Brachos, not in Chelek. Okay. Okay, fine. So those are the three contradictions. Okay, so one more time. The three contradictions are, and that's basically Menashe is accusing Yeshaya of being a kofar in Torah's Moshe. Because Moshe Benu says that Kilo Yaron Devecha, you can't see Hashem. And Yeshaya says, Veres Hashem, right? Yosheva Kisaram Benisa. Moshe said, Hashem is always close to us. Ki Mika Hashem Lakin Bechol Kareni Love, whenever we call out to him. And Yeshaya says, Dir Shashem Behimatzo, only sometimes. And Moshe says, as Mispa Yamecha Amale, just keep the Torah and God will fill your life the full days. But Yeshaya says, no, you can add on time. Yeah.
Did he think that Yeshaya was an actual Navi?
Yeah, sure. He's a kofar. Kofar's a kofar. It doesn't make a difference.
Isn't he saying what God told him?
It's a Navi.
Is he a Navi?
That's a good question. Maybe he's accusing him of being a Navi Sheker.
Yeah.
I guess, okay. I'll buy that. He's accusing him of being a Navi Sheker, too. Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Are we entering the
No. Okay. So then, after Menashe accuses Yeshaya of being a kofar, because he's denying Moshe Benu's Nevuah, with those three contradictions. So Yeshaya is like this. Amar Yeshaya. Yeshaya says to himself, Yadonabe de la Makaba Mademele. You know, I know this guy. Okay. And he's not going to listen to my resolutions. Rashi. Yadonabe de Menashe de la Makaba Tirutsu the time of the Kra. Elakatali. He's not going to listen to how I answer him. Okay. He's going to kill me. Okay. V'im ala ashvu yamezit. Right. V'im ala de la Makaba. If I say to him, he's not going to accept it. I'm going to make him into a mezit. Barigasi through killing me. The Asher who suffered Hargani Bedin, he thinks right now he's justified in killing me. I'm really contradicting Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Mutav she'evrach lefanav. Better for me to escape from Menashe. Not to try to respond, because if he doesn't accept, he's going to become amazed.
Well, yeah. It's not, he runs away and why he gets caught?
Who?
Yeshaya?
We won't hear this. We'll get to the story.
No, I'm saying, well, just in terms of plan, what's the alternative?
Yeah, yeah, he's going to escape somehow, and he's not going to get killed.
It's pretty noble, caring about Menashe, even though he's going to kill him.
Why make him into amazing? Why make him into amazing?
Amazing what?
Amazing in killing Yeshaya.
Versus a show gig?
Yeah, no, he's a show gig. Now he thinks Yeshaya is really chayev. Yeshaya is really chayev for contradicting Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu. He thinks he's killing him, but then, if he's going
to... Wait, he's
not killing him if he runs away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what his solution was. I'm not going to argue with him. I'm not going to explain to him why there's no contradictions. Rather, I'll just escape.
Can you also slide and kill him?
Yeah, but that has a downside to it.
It'd still be shocking.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't.
Yeah, like, better than making him amazing, but if you can escape. Okay, now how are you going to get out? Because this whole, Menashe is not by himself. This whole Menashe is based in his whole court's there.
Like, what will be amazing?
If Yeshaya explains to him how to resolve these contradictions.
And then he doesn't buy it.
And then he kills him anyway.
Okay.
Now the question is obviously, why would he kill him? Why would he not accept it?
Oh, if he's an agenda.
Oh, so then he's Mason.
No. He's an agenda now, but he really buys it.
His agenda is influencing his thinking, but it's not, he's not like,
consciously aware of what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
He thinks he's justified.
He thinks he's justified, but he also has an agenda. Fine. I'll buy that. Very good. Yes.
What is the mezid on?
On killing Yeshaya?
No, I'm saying, yeah. What is it?
You're killing him. Okay, he kills him. Yeah, Rashi says that. Be mezid beharigasi. Okay, so what does he do? Amar shame. So he says the shame Hashem. Okay, I think the Yishami has the shame of Farosh, but he says the shame.
Really? You can do that?
Under certain circumstances, apparently. Okay.
Cool.
Ivla b'arza, and then he swallowed up, absorbed into a cedar tree.
That's even more impressive.
Yes. Okay, that it's machlokas with the idea, but apparently he held it was mutter. Okay, swallowed up into. I'm joking around. Good. Swallowed up into a cedar tree. Okay. Asiyu la'arza v'nasrua. So Menashe's men brought the arez. And they brought it to Menashe, and they started chopping it down, making it into boards.
How was this his escape tactic?
He got absorbed into a tree.
Yeah, I'm supposed to. Correct. What? I think the Shalmi says, how did Menashe know which tree it was? So they say his tzitzis were sticking out.
The It's a great tactic.
Was there a tree in the courtroom?
No one sits.
He was in the courtroom, I thought.
I would think he's in the courtroom, correct.
And then he got subsumed into a tree that was next to him in the courtroom, or he like teleported outside.
It doesn't say.
And he split, went through the walls first.
It doesn't say.
It's amazing.
The moral
amazing.
Story
truly
is,
amazing.
According to your family, don't wear scissors.
No, tuck in your
tits. Tuck in your tits. There you go. Tuck in your tits. Okay. Okay, fine. So they started. So Menashe's men started chopping it into boards, making it into planks. Okay. Kimata lahade puma. So when the axe got to Yeshaya's mouth, I guess who was in the tree, right? Nachnafshe, he died. Mishim de Amar ubisoch amtames vasayim anochi Yosef. Because of his chait in the very beginning of his nevuah, his first nevuah, in Perek Vav, right? Wow. The book is out of order a little bit. What? Yeah, Book of Yeshaya is out of order. His first nevuah is really Perek Vav.
Nevuah is Ma'aseh.
That was his first introduction, right? Exactly. That's when he's appointed as a shliach. Okay, Rashi in Perek Aleph, I think, lays out the order of the book a little bit, so it's not written fully in order. And when he was a first initiate, he sinned. He basically said, that I'm not worthy, I'm going to die from seeing this vision. And one of his things was, besides his own problems, was that he's besoch am tamei sosayim anochi Yosef.
Really? He insulted Am Yisrael?
Yes, correct. And Rashi is mishum hachi yanish linesurei pume, basically his mouth was chopped off. Mishum de karinu liso am tamei sosayim midaito. So he called out of his own decision, his own das, he called Klai Yisrael am tamei sosayim. God never told him to say that, and it wasn't rebuking Klal Yisrael. It was like his own decision.
So what's my problem?
Basically, it's similar to like when Moshe Benu by the snap, similar type of issue. You know, it's like or Eliyahu also. Eliyahu also has that.
Was he right there?
Who?
Yeshaya?
No, he's criticized. He's punished for it. Yeah. I think Eliyahu was also.
But was he wrong about it? Were they not on Aros side?
Klai Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom. Klai Yisrael.
He prayed that.
Are you kidding me? You want me to fall for what you're trying to set me up here?
That's why I need Tocha.
Right. Well, they need Tocha. It's one thing if God tells you, or if you're giving them Tocha, then you could do that. I mean, Yeshaya says worse to Klai Yisrael. In his tochachas, much worse.
Yeah.
Yes, but much worse.
So
right?
You make it not true if God didn't tell you, maybe not.
I mean, it's apparently behind Klal Yisrael's back. You know, you're not supposed to be saying this to God about Klal Yisrael.
But you can say to them in the person.
If you're giving them tochach, and God commanded you to. But midaito to say that about Klal Yisrael, chas v'shalom.
It's true though. Is it actually? I mean, it's lashon hara.
But you're telling me he told it to God for a reason, no? Saying he shouldn't be the Navi because this is the problem.
Right, and he's saying part of the thing is he's part of this nation and even he himself doesn't deserve it. And it's why he should be, I think he thought he would die from seeing the Ma'aseh Merkabah. I mean, there's different ways to learn it.
So it doesn't sound like so bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the angel comes up to him and puts a coal, I think it's Gabriel maybe, puts a coal on his mouth and says, Sar avonech v'chatosecha techupar, or something like that. That he needed kapara for that, for saying that.
Wasn't this his kapara?
Wait, then if he got kapara, then why is he dying?
I know, they asked that question. Okay. So the kapara for the mezuzah, the shogi, the whole Torah. Okay. In any event, it's a chait. Okay.
All right, I'll take your word for it. This whole thing is fantastic so far.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
It's not the most shocking detail.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's your problem. Okay.
All right, I'll put this for you.
Okay, fine. That is the first part of the Gemara. Okay. So, okay. So I'd like to. We'll try to explain the first part, and then we'll move to the second part. Second part of the Gemara is the Gemara. That's the story. Second part of the Gemara says, bottom line, these psukim are kashas. They are contradictions. How do you resolve them? And then there's three, you know, separate. The Gemara tries to resolve each contradiction. And if we have time, I'll just go through them fairly quickly. The last one is they're interesting. The last one is them Chogis Rabbi Kiva and Chamim, whether God can add on years to your life, or does God add on years to your life? Okay. So let us start off with. Okay, let's start off with this first point. What was the argument, the chalukas between Menashe and Yeshaya? Okay, is he just saying you have a contradiction? Right? Or these psukim, is there something, some common theme that Menashe is accusing Yeshaya of? Okay. That's the first approach. What is their machlokas? Because, I mean, let me see. Maybe I'm starting too far. Let me start the other one. What's going on? What's the pshat with the magic stuff? Okay, then we'll come back to that question, is what's their argument, okay? So what does it mean? He says the shame, and he's Nivla Be'erez, right? Sits it sticking out, right? The whole thing sounds crazy. Okay?
It's just describing what happened.
Yeah. It's one way to learn. Okay, some learn that way. Okay. So let's just say, start off with that. Okay. So it seems like Yeshaya is convinced that if he tries to argue with Menashe, it's not going to work. Okay? If he tries to argue with Menashe directly and try to resolve the contradictions, Rashi, the Tirutze, Taima, Dekroi, he's going to kill him anyway. Okay, he's not going to accept it. So basically, what I want to say is he took a different approach. Okay, he took a different approach. It's basically Menashe is accusing him of being a kofar. Okay, and there's two ways you can try to show that you're not a kofar. One is to answer up the accusations, the particular accusations. You're being denying Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, your Navi Shekhar, or whatever, by contradicting Pesukim. So one way is you could have given the whole second half of the Gemara why these aren't contradictions. Right? These aren't really contradictions. They look at it superficially, but they're not really contradictions. That he was convinced would not work, and it would just make things worse. It would make Menashe too amazing. Okay. But what he did do is there's another way a person can try to show, prove that he's not a kofar. And that's by showing that, look, I'm not going to answer those particulars, but I'll show you my integrity of my character itself. He shows him that he holds by the Shem Hashem, look through my Sefer, I've never said anything against Yichud Hashem. Okay? And he has impeccable character, he's a tzaddik. Okay? So I think pshat is Ivla Ba'arza means he totally identified himself with an Erez. Again, like Erez is a mashal for a tzaddik. Okay? Based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, tzaddik etamar yifrach ka'erez ba'vanon yizgah. Okay, and we say he's like Arzei Levanon, like a mashal for a tzaddik is a gadol b'Yisrael. And Arez is like the tallest tree, and a gadol b'Yisrael is Nimshok Arez. So Ivla Be'erez means he basically said the Shem Hashem, and he was trying to show him that he completely holds by Yichud Hashem, he holds by Toras Moshe, he is a tzaddik, he has impeccable character, and there's nothing he's ever done that's ever been impeachable offense. And like, yes, these are kashas, you know, maybe they have answers. But like clearly he's not a kofar. He clearly holds by Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's the big tzaddik. Okay, and that's a approach that could work. Right? A person can escape charges of heresy through this method also. And the Gemara saying is that really would have worked. This plan really would have worked. Okay, except what Menashe and his men did is they took apart his claim piece by piece, right, board by board. They chopped up this tree basically piece by piece to see. Is this claim really true that he's this great tzaddik that he never does anything wrong? And basically, it would have worked had it not been that he did make mistakes. And ultimately, they found his chait written in the book itself of Am Tumeis Vasayim Anochi Yoshev, right? And that he said Lashon Hara B'Klal Yisrael. And as a result of that, basically, his image of him presenting himself as image at this perfect tzaddik, who could not possibly be a kofar, failed because of that.
He's a son of Yisrael, looks like.
You're right. He's attacking Klal Yisrael, right? Exactly. And that ultimately was his undoing. That's why his plan didn't work. Okay? Yeah, I mean, we may say a little bit better in a second when we explain the comeback. Maybe we'll say a little bit deeper, but yeah, go ahead.
One chet ruined it, and I assume in the whole book of Yeshad, there's a lot of tzitzis he has there.
Yeah, correct. That's, I think, pshat is the tzitzis sticking out, is that a person who puts his tzitzis out, he's showing the world, he's a tzaddik. That was in a sense led to his downfall. When you portray yourself as this big tzaddik, you're inviting people to take you apart piece by piece. And then if they find anything, then they're just going to destroy you. So it's like a nice, it's not really a great idea to portray yourself as a great tzaddik, you know, externally, because then people are always looking to see, is it really true? Is that really what he is inside? And they find the smallest thing, and it's not the biggest chet, you're right, but it's once there's a conflict between your internal behavior and how you portray yourself, then they say you're just a faker. They just say you're a faker. Okay, so that was basically his thing. His thing was to portray himself as this great tzaddik to hanging out, and that ultimately to his undoing. It's like a strategy that has like lends itself to backfiring. Once people find any problem, they accuse you of being a faker, and then you're dead. Okay, but on the other hand, he didn't want to go for this other approach. Okay, you know,
couldn't you try to just use a phrase, there hasn't been a tzaddik who's live with that hate.
Yeah, you try that. You know, maybe your hate is your kofar also. You know, you know, the approach is he's the perfect tzaddik who's done nothing wrong. How could you possibly accuse him of this? And it seems like that image might have worked. Had it not been that he had chinks in the armor, that's what allowed Menashe to kill him.
So, okay. Why say he's going to run away then? What's the idea of running away?
Ivrach means to escape, avoid the situation. Doesn't mean to literally, you know, do magic and fly away. Means not not directly.
Okay, I've heard their thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Right, change the conversation. Exactly. Don't attack. Don't try to answer it directly. Answer the kashas, but try to change the conversation to something else. Right, try to a different approach.
He was actually killed for this?
Menashe killed him. That's Midigilch Shichsen. Hey, go ahead.
I still don't understand the word mazid. If his escape plan would work, he's not going to be killed at all. So what's the mazid?
Mazid is if he had tried to answer up the questions.
Right.
And Menashe wouldn't have accepted him. Accepted the answers.
There's no lack of mazid in the other approach, though. He gets away.
Let's say he gets caught. I mean,
Shogi,
if he gets killed, then.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm not sure if this is a question you're asking, but you can ask, is like, what if this approach didn't work? Why is Menashe not amazing now?
Yeah, no, no, watch Shogi.
Because he had the Yichay.
Yeah, he thinks he's really
correct. Right, Hanami. Maybe you could say that the plan would have worked. This is a plan that could have worked, and the reason it failed is because. Eonesh, because the Yishai deserved this punishment to some degree because of his chait. And now Menashe's, you know, really thought he was a kofar because the whole plan didn't work.
Was he mazed
though? Who? Menashe?
Yeah.
No.
Wasn't?
No.
He didn't have an agenda?
He had an agenda.
But he thought he was. Okay, so let's think of Menashe. Okay, what is Menashe doing? Okay, does he really think about Yishai as a kofar? Yeah. It does seem like he is. So why, and if he does, then why can Yishai answer it up?
Isn't it very normal that a person has an underlying agenda but has to come up with some rationale and rationalize their actions to make themselves feel better about it?
Yeah, okay, good. So what is his agenda? What is Menashe's agenda exactly?
This guy's criticizing him, I presume. I don't know the Nivu at all, but I presume he was criticizing him.
Right, Menashe. So Menashe is, you know, the worst chote, right? And ultimately Menashe is the one who put the tzelem in the heichal, right, I think. I'm pretty sure. Menashe's hemet tzelem beheichal. And, right.
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And so he's a very big time of the Odazara. And right. So what exactly was the conflict between Yishai and Menashe such that Menashe wanted to kill him? And what is it? Has this conversation, Chazal's examples of the Psukim really bring it out? So this is right, Fader's approach.
What was the
Psukim then? Okay, the three Psukim are, at first Menashe says, Moshe Benu says, Lo Yirani Adam Machai, nobody could see Hashem. And you said, Yishai of Eres Hashem, you saw Hashem. Okay. Two is Moshe says Hashem is always close to us. Hashem lakini bechol karinu elav never Hashem, and you say no dish Hashem b'matzah only sometimes. And the third is Moshe Rabbeinu says the best you can do is live out a full life, and you're adding you could add 15 years to Yechizkiah's life.
Oh,
right, those are the three contradictions.
And you think there's some idea in all this contradictions?
I think so because they're not really great contradictions. And you see, Tosas brings down, like, in the Torah itself, it says, "Vayechazu SLK Yisrael by the Tzili Ben Yisrael." You know what I mean? So the Torah itself has that. So it's, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that Chazal are telling you these three contradictions because they're bringing out the underlying issue going on here. You could just say that these are the only. And also, like, I'm not really holding, but I imagine there's many more other superficial contradictions you can find between Yishaya and the Torah. You know what I mean? It's, you know, why are they highlighting these three? And they do seem to be something similar, you know what I mean, between them all. Okay. So this is our Fader's approach. It was like this. Okay, you want to say is that basically in the times of the Nevi'im, right, you always had, throughout the Nevi'im, you always have these, there's like two power institutions in Klal Yisrael. One is the Malchus and the other is the Navi. Okay, like you see, for example, Achav and Eliyahu, there's like a conflict, but throughout like the kings are wicked, and the Nevi'im are criticizing them. And then, you know, the kings don't like the Nevi'im. The kings kill the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im run away from the kings, and they criticize them. And there's a constant conflict between the kings and the prophets. And they're really two different power structures. One's the religious institution. One is the monarchy, or the legal institution, right? Political. One's political power, one's religious power, I guess. Something like that. And Menashe is trying to get rid of Yishaya because he wants to, you know, solidify his rule, and he doesn't want this guy criticizing. And Yishai is a old man at this point who has a tremendous amount of street credibility with Klal Yisrael, because of his prophecies. And Manasseh is trying to get rid of Yeshaya so that he can do what he wants in terms of Avodah Zarah. Okay, so what he's accusing Yeshaya of is essentially basically being a false prophet, but he's accusing Yeshaya of basically creating, because Yeshaya is very popular, so he's, which is further reflects the fact that Manasseh has to have legitimate accusations against him. He can't just kill him, right? He's got to make a trial. It doesn't seem like, because Yeshaya has popular support, you can't just go ahead and kill him. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeshaya was popular?
I mean, he's certainly the great Navi, you know.
Maybe, yeah, for us now, but doesn't anybody like them back in the day?
I mean, nobody likes Navi.
No, the front guys love
him. Yeah. Yirmiyah's not.
I mean, I imagine he has, he had a, he has, he has a lot of support. Yirmiyah's different. Yirmiyah's not Yeshaya. I don't think so, especially after the nace of Bachiskiah for, what's his name? Not Tiglath Pileser, I mean, it's the same name, but Sancheriv. I don't know. It seems to me that Yeshaya has his group's supporters, right? He does have supporters. Okay, maybe I could use a riot or two, but I don't. So, in any event, is what he's saying is he's accusing Yeshaya of starting like a cult of personality around himself. Okay, and he's saying that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that. Okay, that's not the Derech of the Torah. Is for the Navi to basically make himself into this magic man. Okay, who's every, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Le'yan Adam Machai, and you're making yourself like you can see God. You can see God. And Moshe Rabbeinu can't, nobody else can, but you can see God. You can perceive God directly. You're ascribing to yourself greater prophetic powers than Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem is always close to Klal Yisrael. And you're saying, sometimes he is, sometimes he's not. How are you going to know when? When can you call out to Hashem and he'll answer you?
Come to me.
Come to the Navi. The Navi can tell you. How else are you going to know if the Navi's not going to tell you? Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, like, the best you can do is basically live out a full, healthy life according to, you know, the laws of nature, according to genetics, what you're capable of, you know, whatever, 80 years, 90 years, 100 years, whatever it is. And you're just saying, boom, you know, you do good, you listen, add on 15 years. Like, you have these magic powers of adding on years to people's lives. Nobody else could do this before you. Okay, so what you're doing is Yeshaya, he's accusing Yeshaya of essentially being a false Navi, but by being a false Navi, by making it all about himself. Aggregating like special powers to himself, he has a special relationship to God. He can see God, nobody else can. And if you want to come close to God, you want God to daven, you have to talk to me. I'm your gateway to God, right? It's like you have to really, you know, he's making himself the super tzaddik. That the only way you can really relate to God is through me. I have special powers of seeing God, and I can, if you're good, I can add years to your life. Okay, and that's what Manasseh is accusing him of. Okay, I want to say something a little different. Okay, different approach. And my thing has a problem, Akasha, and I have a bad answer, and maybe one of you guys can work it out a different time. Okay, I'll tell you the approach. So I want to say that it's more of a philosophical machlokas between Manasseh and Yeshaya. That Manasseh is basically ascribing to a philosophy of God. He's not rejecting the God. He's not rejecting God. Mamtikol Nimtza. But he's thinking about it in the way that Ovdei Avodah Zarah think about God. So he's saying, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo Yiran De'Adam V'Chai, is that the God ultimately, the true God of ultimately Echad, is far removed. Nobody can perceive him. He's unperceivable. We don't perceive God, we perceive other things. We perceive the Malachim, we perceive other things. We don't perceive God. Okay? And you're claiming you can see God, because the guy in the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they hold by the Mamtikol Nimtza, the source of all existence. They just don't hold that you can really relate to him, that you can perceive him. He's just too far removed. And you're saying you can relate to him, right? And in the Ovdei Avodah Zarah's framework is that this ultimate God, he works within the framework of nature. He sets up angels, he sets up demigods, other things that ultimately you're supposed to serve in the Avodah Zarah framework. Right, but there's like the and Yo Yishai are saying that that's in the framework of nature and the framework of the demigods that he sets up, and Yo Yishai are saying that you can overturn that you get it 15 years, that there's no framework that he works within, that he can just he changes the nature and gives you extra 15 years. Right, but Menashe's philosophy was that there's this God who's ultimately far removed, you can't even relate to him, And he works within a framework of nature and Avodah Zarah. And what we really need to do is we need to relate to the Avodah Zarah. We got to dive into these Avodah Zarah. We got to work within the nature. We can't really be working with this God who's far removed. Okay. The problem with that approach, and that's the whole philosophy of the Zarah, right? And that's why Yeshaya realized that he's not going to get anywhere by arguing with Menashe philosophically, because Menashe is not going to abandon his framework. Right. The problem is the second case is seems to be the opposite. Is Menashe is telling Yeshaya, "B'chol kareinu love, God is always close to us, and you're telling us just sometimes." So how does that work? It almost seems backwards for me, you know.
Why isn't that another example that he thinks that God is close? Isn't Menashe the one saying that God is always found and closer? And is Menashe the one saying that Yeshaya is saying he's removed?
Yeshaya is saying sometimes he's close, sometimes he's not.
So that's more removed than saying he's always close, no?
I guess so, but I'm trying to present Menashe as being like holding by the idea of Yichud Hashem, but as something that's like largely irrelevant to your avodah. He's far removed. You can't perceive him. He doesn't interfere with nature. But then what do you mean? He's saying that God is always close to us.
Meaning you think Menashe thinks that God is actually very removed.
Very removed, exactly. And that's why you worship Avodah Zarah. Because what's the point? You don't deal with something that's so far removed.
Oh, I see.
Correct. So the problem even with Menashe here is saying, B'chol kareinu lav, that God is really close, Moshe says. So I thought you could say is that, look, Menashe ultimately puts it Tzelem on the Heichal, right? So it could be Menashe holds that, like you can relate that ultimately God himself is very far removed. But B'chol kareinu lav doesn't mean God himself. It means like the Shechina, the idol that God sets up in the Heichal or whatever it is, that this thing that God sets up, that is always close to us. By making an Etzelam in the Heichal, we're right there. We can always talk to this idol. So, you know what I mean? He interprets B'chol kareinu lav is through these intermediaries, God's always close to us because he sets up these intermediaries, and that's why he puts Etzelam to represent God in the Heichal. Okay, I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, go ahead.
Why are you assuming that the Torah of Gemara matches on with you? I mean, we know they're not the Torah, right?
I know that the Gemara, that's the Gemara in Chelek. Right, he says, what, Timnai, the Pilegesh, he attacked him. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's you know, you could say the whole thing is just a total sham. I mean, that, it could be later on in his life, when he eventually, it seems like in his initial thing, when he initially came to power, it seems like he's attacking, if you can take this on its face value, that he's really accusing Yeshaya of attacking Taurus Moshe. I'm kind of saying that he took a philosophy of the Torah. I hear your question. Mm. I guess I'm going to have to say that I mean, Menashe was a king for 50 years, you know? So I guess I'm going to have to say that over time, his relationship to the Torah degenerated. Mm-hmm. First, he took the Torah on a surface. First, he's accepting Taurus Moshe on its face value without the parish of the Nevi'im and the Chachamim. He's attacking Yeshaya's interpretation of the Torah. He's interpreting himself, and I guess that ultimately leads him to be denigrating the Torah itself. Like, once the person denies the parish of the Nevi'im, the way to learn it, ultimately that devolves. But I may hear your question.
Why is it okay for Yeshaya to say these borderline heretical things?
Well, Gemara's going to explain it. Okay, we'll take that. That's the second half of this year.
That's the pshat of, even if he meant different things, the pshat leads people off the astray.
I mean, that's why you have Torah Shel Peh. Torah Shel Peh resolves these things. I mean, the Torah itself has contradictions, you know, everywhere. That's the Derech of the Torah. It writes in contradictions, and you have to resolve it. It's the way it hides secrets, the way, you know. And there's just no way to avoid. There's no way to avoid contradictions. There's just no way to avoid it. You're writing in two different frameworks. Unless you're going to give lengthy expositions in Piksav, you're just always going to have, you know, there's no book that doesn't have superficial contradictions.
Your book?
It's got it. Deeper ones, too. Okay, good. Yeah, that's why he thought he'd be amazing. Either pshat. It's just if you try to attack it directly, Menashe's not going to admit he's wrong. You know, he's not going to admit he's wrong either. He's not going to drop his philosophical system. Or like Rav Feder wants to say, is like, Menashe here is accusing Yeshaya of being this cult of personality, and if you just attack it directly, you're not going to... You're not going to get anywhere. No, that's not really true. That's not really...
Every cult leader denies that cult leader. I've seen this 1,000 times.
Yeah. So the best he could do is just to show... The best he could try to do is just to show that, like... I mean, there's an irony. He's saying it, you're making yourself with this big tzad that relates to God, and Yeshaya's method is to show I'm unimpeachable. To me, the reason why Yeshaya thought this might work is because he realized Menashe could not just kill him without having the support of the court, without having the support of the people. You know, so if he can present himself to the people as being this perfect tzaddik, then Menashe would not have the popular support necessary to kill Yeshaya. You know, that could further be, if you want to take that as a maybe say deeper, is once like the chait of criticizing the people came out, Am Tamei Sosayim, ultimately the people aren't going to support him because you see he's talking bad about them.
He betrayed them.
Yeah, to God when nobody's looking. You know, I mean, he wrote in the book, but okay. Yeah, I mean, that's maybe like the under my. I just think it seems to me the reason Menashe can't kill Yeshaya is because even though he's a political opponent of Menashe, you need popular support. And once he can undermine Yeshaya's popular support because he says, Antimei Sosayim, that's what, you know, that's what enabled Menashe to be able to pull off his move and kill Yeshaya.
Yeah, it shows this guy was just plotting all the time to trick everyone.
He doesn't really care about you, he really cares about himself. It further feeds into the narrative of he just cares about himself, he doesn't care about you, he just wants you to be his posse in order to make himself wealthy and powerful. That's all.
Now, how did he even, I know this is like a stupid question, but like, how did he even like get that information? Like, why would he just offer that up?
Who?
Yeshaya.
What information?
That he spoke behind, that he said that.
Oh, it's in the book. He wrote it in his book. It's in the Yeshaya Sefer.
I mean, that book was published.
Yeah, it's the end of Yeshaya. Like, Yeshaya, I think, wrote his own Sefer. I think Gemara says that.
No. Yeah, because he was killed.
No. I mean, the Nevi'im only read it the day that they die. Chizkiya. Yeah. No, yeah. Hold on a second. It says Chizkiya wrote it, no?
Yeah, and the Anshei Chizkiya.
Oh, the Anshei Chizkiya. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Anshei Chizkiya wrote it. Yeah. Okay. You mean, so how did, I guess he maybe told this Nevu over. I guess he told the Nevu over.
This Nevu, was it a Nevuah that he knew to tell people?
It was the Nevuah, the Maisim Merkava Nevuah.
Right, and the Maisim Merkava Nevuah, did it say, Betel Hashem?
I'm Thomas with Simon Ochi Yoshev. Yeah, it says that. Right, so I guess it wasn't a secret.
So it was public, like, it was public knowledge. So why would it have changed? Meaning,
they wanted people know it already?
People already knew about it. All right, who cares?
I guess like a person does something wrong, but then that enables people to bring it up later on in their life and build a narrative around it. I don't know. Let's go further, okay?
What?
No, it's a good question. It's a good question.
What was the question?
He's just saying, why do people already know it in advance?
Who did you know that in advance?
Yeah. Who reads the book, Ariel?
Raise your hand if you read this book.
Okay. No. Yaakov's good. The book hadn't been fully composed and published and edited and put out. Anshei Chizkiya really did that. The Nevuah was said. Who knew it?
The Nevuah was already given, and this was a part of the Nevuah. It's not disgraceful.
Right, but the book had not been published. The book hadn't been published yet.
This wasn't what God told him. He told this to God.
No, but it's recorded in Sefer Yeshaya.
But the book wasn't out yet.
It wasn't out yet. So you already say, how do they know about it?
Who knows Sefer Yeshaya?
That's the same in public.
Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He said in public, but it hadn't been published. So it wasn't well known. All right, let's don't worry about it. Very good. Okay, fine.
Weiter.
Okay, fine. Mikol Makam. Okay, so moving on to the second part of the second part. Okay? Mikol Makam. Kashu Krayadadi. Right? So how do you answer these? So the Gemara answers like this. V'eiris Hashem. So how do you have the contradiction that Moshe says you can't see Hashem and now he sees Hashem? It says, Kidatanya kol nevim nistaklu basbakaya she'ena me'ira, Moshe bin nistaklu mistaklu basbakaya me'ira. Okay, so all the other nevim, they don't see with a clear looking glass. Okay, Moshe bin saw clearly. Rashi. So the all the other nevim see with an unclear glass. Ukasvurim liros feloro. So they think they're seeing Hashem, but they're not really seeing Hashem. The motion is stakab es bakaya meir. A motion looked through the clear glass. The yadesh la ro befanav. And he realized he could not see God himself directly. Okay? So the question is, what exactly does that mean? And why do Nevi'im think that they see when they don't really see? Right? Okay. So in the interest of time, I'm not going to give you guys any time to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Just like this, is that basically man's knowledge and even other Nevi'im, the knowledge of Nevi'im, it's all within a certain framework. And they gain Yedias Hashem, we gain Yedias Hashem in our framework, and the Nevi'im gain it in a higher level, but in their own framework, but all the Nevi'im. Ultimately, what Moshe was able to realize is that the entire framework in which you perceive God is ultimately wrong. It ultimately is not, it's what's available to us. Ultimately, all the way we think that we really perceive God and we see God, the highest level of Yedias Hashem is to realize that the very framework itself is incorrect, and it's impossible to really know God, even in the, within that framework that we use. Okay, but the Navi perceives it. He sees God in his own framework, in the framework that's available to him, and he sees God. Okay, he perceives the idea of God, and he is not on the level, like the highest level ultimately is to recognize that even that framework of Nevuah, that the Navi perceives God, is ultimately false, is ultimately wrong. And only Moshe Rabbeinu really reached that highest level, where he realized that the very whole framework of Nevuah itself, in which he perceived God, is ultimately flawed. Yeshaya was not on that level. So Yeshaya might know this in abstract, because he has the Torah, but he writes, he records the Nevuah as he perceives it. Okay, so on a primary sense, he perceives that this is really true Yedias Hashem, and it's only in a secondary way does Yeshaya know that this is not really true perception of God. Okay, on a primary sense, in the Nevuah, it seems to him like he is perceiving God.
What is my perception of God?
I mean,
was it meant to be a joke?
Okay. I mean, what about that? What do you mean?
What does it mean that he perceived God? And that, like, visually he perceived it? Or, like, he understood that?
In a prophecy. Yeah, go ahead. I don't know. Anyways, in a prophecy. Whatever that means in a prophecy.
Yeah, so the notion of what God is?
Yeah, I mean, it means conceptually. I don't know if it means in an image. I doubt that.
I thought in the NVMC God is a human image, in other words.
Oh, I don't know. That's the Yecheskel, you mean? Yecheskel? You know, I think about that pasuk. Yeah, go ahead. You know the Rashi in that pasuk?
No.
I saw this bone in pasuk that.
Is that all it says?
I think so.
Did you do that?
The pasuk?
Yeah.
All right, Yecheskel, for sure. You know, I'll think about it.
Oh, Usher. I thought you said...
No, it says Usher, his bone in pasuk that. The pasuk in Yecheskel, where it has, like, the Adam, the most Adam on the key set. Okay, go ahead.
What do you mean by framework if we're talking about negative knowledge?
I mean, what does that mean?
Yes, if you're negating what kind of...
Yeah, we know three negative knowledge. I mean, but how a Navi perceives God, I mean, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's negative. I'm assuming it's negative knowledge anyhow, even for a Navi.
It's a good question. I mean, if it's negative knowledge, then what's wrong with our framework of negative knowledge?
Yeah, there's no framework.
Right, it seems completely reasonable. I mean, look, negative knowledge is a framework of understanding God. If possible, it means that. Yes, and even that framework ultimately is flawed.
That's not good.
No, but that's, look, you perceive, this is how you perceive it. This is what you have to work with. I mean, the point, the basic point is our framework of understanding God. We have negative knowledge about God's essence, positive knowledge about his actions. It's our framework. This is how we understand God. Another way understands it, I would think, on a different level, even than that. Okay, and maybe you want to work within those categories, but I don't think you can really know how a Navi perceives God. You're not a Navi. You know what I mean? And we could try to stuff a Navi into our categories. That's why I can't really answer your question. What does it mean for Navi perceive God? I don't know. I'm not a Navi. You know? And I could just answer you, like, what it means. I'm going to give you a fake answer, basically, if I try to answer that.
I mean, say he understands the notion of God. That doesn't, I mean, I understand the notion, but it's still some meaning to my mind.
All right. I don't know. The basic point is they think they see, you think you understand, you think you have a framework of understanding God, but the ultimate level is to realize that even that framework itself, which seems like a solid framework to us, negative knowledge about his essence, positive knowledge about his actions, beautiful framework, but ultimately Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that you can't, even that framework has a flaw in it. Okay, so the highest level of Yedias Hashem is to realize that the very framework in which you know God itself is not a legitimate framework. And that's lo yirani adam b'chai.
How can you believe that God exists if you think this stuff?
No, you don't. It's a secondary, it's a totally secondary type of knowledge. That it's from Moshe Rabbeinu, we know lo yirani adam b'chai. But you've got to work within your framework. You have to work within the knowledge that's available to you. You can't work outside of that. Now there is value to us to know that ultimately there is a higher level of knowledge out there, but it's, you know, that's why Yeshaya writes it. Vayeres Hashem. He writes, he lives within the framework in which he, just like you got to work within the framework available to you. You can't give up your knowledge.
I know it truly.
Yeah, but you can't access that. You can't live like Moshe Rabbeinu. You can't work with his knowledge. There's value to knowing that there is a higher knowledge of God out there, and in that higher knowledge, your framework is really wrong. But that doesn't justify you becoming, you know, throwing out all knowledge and becoming a skeptic.
If I know my knowledge is really wrong, then that means that my belief...
It's still the best you have. It's still the closest thing you have. It's still, you know, you have to work with it.
If what exists and doesn't exist are both wrong, I don't know what's left.
No, you have an approximation, something that gets you closer than you would have without it. But ultimately, you should be aware that it's not really a legitimate framework for knowing God.
And it's a binary thing, though. Doesn't one of them, by definition, have to be 100% right?
It's not binary. We believe in approximations and come closer.
Isn't does or does not binary? Does not exist.
No, but there's closer. The framework of knowledge that we have, it brings us closer to the true knowledge of God than we would otherwise have. But ultimately, is it a legitimate framework for knowing God? No.
How is there closer? Isn't and it does or does not? Isn't it by definition? He's 100% one or the other.
That's what I'm saying. Not the case.
How could you be neither? Does or does not? Meaning God does exist. God doesn't.
It's subject to degrees.
Isn't his knowledge? Is his knowledge in some ways right or in no ways right?
Ultimately, it's wrong. Okay, but it's the closest. It's the best thing you have, and you have to make use of it. It's the best thing you have. Our framework of knowing God is the best thing available to us. We would be further away if we didn't have it, but is it ultimately a legitimate framework of knowing God? No. No, it's not.
Well.
Okay, but it doesn't mean you're not better off with it than without it.
If I told you something's a circle or not a circle, doesn't it by definition have to be one of the 200%? How can there be degrees in a binary? I'm not understanding.
I'm saying it's not binary.
Has or does not have?
Because of God is not binary?
Because of God, no. I'm saying that knowledge always brings you closer. Frameworks of knowledge bring you closer. But you have to be aware that ultimately your knowledge is flawed. And this framework itself is not truly legitimate.
But don't I have a binary notion in my mind that there is or there isn't? I mean, what's the...
I don't know what you're talking about. Is or isn't. Is or isn't what?
Things. About things. There is a phone, there isn't a phone. If I have a cover on the phone, I say, there is a phone here, there isn't. It's binary. It's either 100% one or the other, right?
No, you can have a closer idea of what a phone is. I think a phone is something you press buttons. I don't really know what's inside of it. A person could have a deeper idea. Do you know what it is? You don't know what it is? You have some idea. You don't really know what it is.
So whatever you believe the thing is, whatever
you can have a closer
whatever
notion.
You think you're referring to, it's either there or not there.
Yeah, we'll take it up with the phone. You know, right. We take it up in the book.
The book.
Okay. The book will be happy. Okay? Yeah. Negative knowledge. Okay? Negative knowledge.
To the book.
Exactly. It all comes down to the book. We'll take it up. Okay, fine. Now, you know, I just don't know what you're talking about, binary and non-binary. I really don't know what you're talking about.
It is or isn't. I'm imagining something either.
Degrees. It's degrees. Degrees. Okay, fine. Okay. You know, listen, this year it's we're moving through these points, okay? Okay. Okay, next. Habiyach Rabatzibor. The contradiction is God always close to us, or is it Habiyach Rabatzibor? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Say like this, is that why should there be a different system, right? And the way the Gemara Rosh Hashanah learns it, it's talking about being Korei Gzardin, right? You can be called to Tshuva and Tzaka and be Korei Gzardin. Okay, rip up the Gzardin. The Rambam. That means, but during these 10 days, Zeres Yemei Tshuva. If you do Tshuva and you're called to Tzaka, so then the Gzardin can be torn up. But once you get past your Yom Kippur, it's too late. It's fixed.
Gzardin.
Right, if you do Tshuva Gemura, you can't right tear it up. The Yachid. But the Tzibor, whenever the Tzibor does Tshuva and they're Tzoik, Hashem answers them. We'll rip up the Gzardin. Okay. So just a simple approach that I tried this with David Feder is we wanted to say that there's two different factors and both of them go against the Yachid. So why should there be a different system? So what I wanted to say is that obviously there's value to always being able to do Tshuva and that benefits somebody. But the idea of the fact that you can always do Tshuva can sometimes be a deterrent in doing Tshuva. For example, of Echtav Eshov, that's a clear example of where really could be a major mechshol. But the fact that you know that by Yom Kippur there's a deadline and you can't do tshuva past that point and that's when it's over, that benefits the yachid. Okay? And it's worthwhile to benefit the yachid to know that there's a deadline, even though it's going to become that after that point you can't no longer do tshuva, it's not going to really be Korei L'Gzardin.
So you're saying it's an artificial deadline in some senses?
Yeah, it benefits the yachid, right.
I mean, naturally, there's no reason particularly in Yom
Kippur. No, I mean, in terms of rachamim, God could have allowed it for the yachid also. But it wouldn't be rachamim for the yachid to let it go past Yom Kippur. The real rachamim for the yachid is to make it a deadline.
And not for the tzibor.
But for the tzibor, this is the argument. One argument is that the tzibor doesn't really sin that way. Tzibur don't sin. The Tzibur doesn't sin. The Tzibur sins because they think they're going to do tshuva later on. That's just not the way the a sin of a Tzibur works. The sin of a Tzibur and the tshuva of the Tzibur, it's based upon, you know, the state of the Tzibur now. The Tzibur is like, doesn't really think ahead in the sense that, you know, we're all going to sin now because we can do tshuva later on.
Yeah.
So, I think so. So, like, not that it's like, it's not a factor at all, but it's much less of a factor. So it could be that, you know, in that sense, the rachamim really is to allow the tzibur always to do tshuva, and that doesn't, it wouldn't really benefit the tzibur to say there's a deadline. In the same way as it benefits the yachid.
No one's plotting on a tzibur to do averos now.
Because they're going
to
do tshuva. That's not the way tzibur's
no
do
tshuva.
Correct. The other thing I would say is that there's an element of chil Hashem that exists more, like when a person who's a tzaddik gets punished for a delayed sin, for a sin they did last year, but now the punishment is coming because you say it's too late. So this element of a chil Hashem, they seem like they're a tzaddik, they've done tshuva, now they're getting punished. So I think that chil Hashem is much greater by the tzibur. The tzibur does tshuva, they change their whole ways, and all of a sudden bad things happen to them because this is a delayed onesh from last year. That's a real chil Hashem. If it happens to the yachid, I think it's less of a chil Hashem because the people say, look, who really knows, that maybe really didn't tshuva. In the same way, you know, you can be tolled on certain things. So I think both factors act against the yachid to basically create a deadline, a point. And only within these 10 days is it really available to really tear up the Gzara Din. It hasn't really been signed. It hasn't really been fixed. That benefits the yachid to have these 10 days to do tshuva. But to have an ongoing process where you could always do tshuva and tear up the Gzara Din works for the tzibur, but not the yachid. Okay. The last machlokes. Got 2 minutes here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, let's see. Maybe go a few more. 5 minutes. Okay, let's see. So, basically, it's a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Right? The Gemara says the ultimate is the Tanahi is can, if a person keeps the Torah mitzvos, what's the best that can happen? Okay? Is it that he lives out his natural life? Right? The Shnei Doros, I don't know, 90, 100 years. Or does a person get, you know, an extra years add on to his life beyond his natural allotment that would have happened. Okay. Now Tosas mentions Tav Tosas and Nirman Aleph. He says, and even though it says in Moikatan, Bane Chayim Izonai, Labis Chus Italia Milsa, Elbe Mazla, Italia Milsa, that how long a person lives, how many has children, and his Parnasa, right? Pshita the Chus Gadol Moel. Pshita that Chus Gadol is Moel to affect your life or your Mizonos and things like that. Okay, he's asking kasha on the chachamim, right? Mi lo shchiach shishtan mazal, but it's certainly not common that your mazal is going to change, like as the story of Elazar ben Pedas. Don't have time to go into that story right now. So I'll just give you the punchline, and you can work out what made me say this a different time, okay?
That's good.
Okay. Good. Tosa is saying like this, is that there's a Gemara that says how long you live, your parnasa, things like that. It's not totally on your schos, because Rab and Rav Chisda were both tzaddik, and both davened and it rained. So you see they were both under Ashgacha Pratis. But nevertheless, Rav Chisda lived 92 years, Rab lived 40. Rav Chisda had 60 children, made weddings. Rab had 60, made 60 funerals for his kids. And Rav Chisda was very wealthy, and Rab was very poor. Okay, so you see, it's not Talian Tzchus, it's Talian Mazel. Mazel means genetics, laws of nature, your external environment, things, fixed things that are nothing to do with your Tzchusim. Okay. Tosas is saying that Pashat the Gemara doesn't really mean that. That it doesn't mean to say, what the Gemara means to say is everything is not Tzchus, but Mazel plays a big role. It doesn't mean to say everything is Mazel. Because Pasha Chazal don't hold by that. Okay, it's clear if you've read enough Gemara, Chazals, read enough Midrashim, Chazal do not believe that basically everything is Talion Mazel, everything is, and that your Schus has no impact on your Parnasa, on your children, on your life. Obviously, Schus plays a role in these things. Okay, that Gemara means to show you, from Rabbi and Chris, you could see it's not all Talion Mazel. Okay, there's your Schus plays a role. Okay, so what the Machlog Sin Rabbi Kiv Nechamim is there are these two systems. There's a system of mazel, which is genetics, laws of nature, the environment, other factors like this, natural law. And then there's the system of hashgacha based upon your schusim, your tzidkus, and your rishus. Okay, and there are these two systems. And ultimately, a person's fate, what happens to a person, is determined by the interplay of these two systems. The machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is how do these two systems interact? What is the interplay of these two systems? Okay, so Rabbi Akiva holds that what the interplay is, the way you work out the relationship between the two systems, the natural law and the system of Hashgacha Pratis based on Schus, is that Natural law sets up the available range of possibilities that's available to a person. Okay? A person, based on natural law, can live up to 90, can die in, you know, 30 days or whatever, bar mitzvah, whatever it is. Okay? Yeah, 30 days, right? Right away. So there's a certain range of possibilities set up by the laws of nature, set by a person's genetics. And what Hashkacha does, it selects from the available possibilities which one is going to happen. A Rasha will die earlier, a Tzaddik will live longer. But it doesn't create new possibilities. It works in the framework of possibilities. Of course, there's such a thing as miracles. That's what we're not talking about. We're talking about the regular interplay of Hashkacha Klaus, Hashkacha Pratis, how these two systems interact. So Rabbi Akiva holds possibilities are set out by Hashkacha Klaus, and Hashkacha Pratis selects which one of these possibilities. So therefore, the best you can have is Mispar Yemecha Amale. That's the most you can have. Okay. The Chum hold that no, that basically what happens to a person, the possibilities themselves are a combination, a linear combination, you could argue. Maybe it's weighted towards the two sides, where Belezer and Pedas will tell you how it could be weighted, but basically it's a combination of the two factors. So the very potential themselves is when you want to say what happens to a person, it's a combination of two factors. The mazel, the laws of nature, genetics, and it's Hashkacha. Okay, and you have to combine those two systems. There's an interaction between those two. And they sort of, it's a linear combination of the two. Okay? And it's every person, it's subjective relative to every person. Some people, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was a case where in order to change his parnasa would have changed the whole world. That's what God told him. You know, sometimes you can change a person's parnasa very easily. Sometimes it interacts with so many other things, you have no idea. So it could be sometimes the mazel, the genetics of a person plays such a role that it would be a miracle to change it. Sometimes it'd be a small thing. So it's always a different factors, you know, how much a person's laws of nature dictate a person's life and his children and his parnasa, those things. But ultimately, what the potential available is the combination of two systems, according to Chachamim. Okay, and therefore, through the combination of Hashka of his chusin plus the mazel, Chizkiyahu was entitled to 15 more years than just mazel alone. Rabbi Akiva holds that's not true, that's not the way it works. Mazel sets up the full range of possibilities, and Schus can basically select 15 years less if he sinned, or can go back to the upper limit, but the framework of Schus works within the confines of the possibilities set up by the Mazel, the Hashkacha Klaus. Good? Marv.